This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlo Dermogradichian. Welcome to another episode of All Things Armenian. Today, my guest is actor, filmmaker, Nora Armani. Nora Armani is based in New York, and we'd like to welcome her to our show today. Welcome, Nora.
Thank you so much, Barlo. It's wonderful to be talking to you and live on the air.
Nora, you were born in Egypt, and you grew up in a family of Armenian parents. But tell us a little bit about your early background in Egypt and about your journey to becoming a playwright and an actor.
Yes, it's very interesting. I was born in Egypt of Armenian parents, and I grew up there, went to school, an Armenian school, elementary school, and then after that, middle school and high school were an English school. So English was taught at a very early age in my life, so it's pretty much my mother tongue now, and I also call it my professional language, because even though technically Armenian is my mother tongue, but I cannot express myself in many of the technicalities, academic stuff, or even in my work as an actor, producer, filmmaker, and as a stage director. There are so many terminologies that I'm not really familiar with, especially in Western Armenian. In Eastern Armenian, it's easier because I've been going a lot to Armenia and working there and so on. So Egypt was my, let's say, beginnings. And then when I finished high school, I went to the American University in Cairo, where I studied sociology and theater. So it was a my major was sociology, and theater ended up being the minor because there was no theater department at the time. Then after I finished that, I went on to London and was accepted at the London School of Economics to continue a master's degree in sociology again. But the same time that I was pursuing my master's degree in sociology in London, I was already acting in different productions, in different stage productions mostly, and so on. Following the, when I finished my master's degree, that's when, with my ex-husband, Gerald Papazian, who you know very well, we immigrated to the United States and lived in Detroit for a while before we moved to California, to Los Angeles, where I continued my acting activities. And I did some television there, some stage, and so on. Then we both moved back to Europe, so we backed up, and this time it was France. And in France, I ended up forming my film production company, which produced a couple of films, one of which, Haifa, was in the official selection at the Cannes Film Festival. So I became from actor to producer to filmmaker. So it was a major journey for me. And I thought Paris is it. That's it. I'm not moving back to the United States anymore. And how little do we know as to what is in store for us? Lo and behold, next thing I know, I'm moving to New York. So this, which is where I am based right now and where I just recently completed my second master's degree. And this one is in theater and film studies. Well, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. When you were in Egypt, then what kind of drew you to the acting, to the art world?
What was it? Well, as a child, I always was fascinated, and maybe I even can say quite immodestly that I had some talent, it looks like, because I was the oldest of my group of cousins. My younger cousin was 1 year younger than me, and then her twins, and then my brother is 4 years younger, so I was the oldest of the bunch. And in the summer, when we used to go to spend the summer with my aunt in Alexandria, I would stage plays and I would give roles to everyone and I would direct and perform and so on. So that's the earliest recollection of actually doing theater. But then to stand up in front of an audience and actually perform in a play, that came when I was 15 years old, 14, 15, in Cairo by Gerald. Gerald Papazian had a theater. Was running a theater company at the Armenian Cultural Organization Art Club at the time. And he was looking for an actress to do the second of two plays. He was in one with one other actress, and he had a second play, which he had written himself, called Princess at the Window, I still remember. And he was looking for an actress. So people who knew me recommended me. And that started a long journey of our artistic collaboration with Gerald. So that was the first experience I had back in Cairo. Then at the American University, of course. And then I didn't perform with a professional Egyptian stage or screen until later, much, much later, when I went back to Egypt in 2002, as late as that.
And when you were doing these early plays, of course, you were doing them in Armenian, right?
Right. At the Armenian Cultural Club, we were performing in Armenian. And then at the American University, it was in English, of course. And however, paradoxically, my first performance at the American University was in French. It was Albert Camus' Les Justes. I don't know what the English translation is, The Just Ones, or, you know, there is the story about the bombing of the Tsar's carriage back in 1905. By a bunch of terrorists and so on. And it was about that. And it was in French. So, and then after that, of course, I did many other productions at the American University in Cairo in English.
And when you've been traveling and you've been developing in your artistic career, you've also still kept your Armenian ties in the sense that you've directed some of William Saroyan's works and also did Sojourn at Ararat with Gerald. So tell us a little bit about those.
Right. I mean, it's been a very interesting journey. And as you know, we were in Fresno many, many moons ago. And maybe now that I'm talking to you, I'm thinking if it weren't for this COVID, we should have planned to come back and do another performance after all these years. Sojourn at Ararat was a very interesting piece of work in that it was based on the compilation of Armenian poetry through the ages. And we took 40 completely unrelated pieces and strung them together in a way that together from one to the next, they tell a story. And it was the story of a couple who meet, fall in love, go through hardships, go through the genocide, and then end up with a hopeful note in a new found homeland or something like that. And we initially created the play to take it to Edinburgh, to the Edinburgh Festival, as a trial. We had no pretensions. We didn't know what was going to happen with it. So we come on stage and, you know, in Edinburgh during the festival, you sometimes get very small audiences, sometimes get big audiences. So as it happened, one of the performance days, there were too few people. And then there's a unspoken rule of theater that says if there are less people in the audience than there are on stage, you're able to cancel the performance. And we were debating, and I said, you know what? No, we won't, because there's two people on stage and two people in the audience. So we started. As it turned, one of those two people, which later on more people trickled in, but at the beginning there were two, and one of those two people was the critic for the Scotsman newspaper. And he gave us a rave review, not only about the performance and the works and the poetry, but also talking about Armenians and the genocide and Turkey and Ottoman Empire and how this, all the stuff that one would expect somebody to capture and write about. And when he did that, we realized that, wait a minute, we have something here that might be worthwhile promoting further. And we came back to Los Angeles. We were living in L.A. at the time, all happy and excited. We go to the Fountain Theater, well, actually to the Ensemble Stage Theater at the time. And they, based on the review from the Scotsman, immediately they engage us. And we played 6 weeks in L.A., winning more awards, getting incredible accolades, and then an incredible journey of tours started with that play. And we ended up doing not only the English version, but the French version as well. And that's the play we brought to Fresno many, many moons ago.
Right. And and recently you've been spending, not recently, but you've spent quite a bit of time in Armenia. And in fact, you were telling me in an earlier conversation about the status of the film industry and the theater industry. Can you tell us a little bit about Armenia, about what's happening today in the Republic of Armenia?
Right. Well, I've been going to Armenia since I was a kid, like really, really a kid. From elementary school, I was invited to spend the summer in one of the camps up in the mountains. And that was the first encounter for me with Armenia. And I fell in love. And it's been a long love story that had its ups and downs at certain points, but not because of Armenia, but because of people and how I had been treated in certain situations. But then you wise up and you say, no, the country has nothing to do with these one or two bad apples in the bunch, so I have to put things into perspective. So I was going to Armenia almost regularly until 1993. Those were the difficult years, 91, 92, 93. I was in Armenia filming there. It was one of the first feature films that I was starring in, Deadline in 7 Days, by Ara Erenjakian, who is the artistic director of the Camera Theater in Yerevan. And it was an incredible experience. It was curfew time, war, independence, and you name it, I saw that, all firsthand living there. Then in 1993, I left Armenia and started to build my life in Paris, basically. And for 14 years, I didn't go back. Things were very difficult there. I had my own problems to solve and structure my life in a new country under new circumstances. And 2007, I went back for a family reason, and then the doors were opened again. And in 2008, as you mentioned earlier, I was invited on the occasion of Saroyan's centenary to direct a play, on which occasion I adapted Papa, You're Crazy, the novel, the entire novel, to a one-hour, one-man show, which we did with a wonderful actor, Bartolomeu Sorokzynski. He's of Polish origin, Bart, and he did a wonderful job. So maybe it's time for me to revive that again. So that has been one of the highlights of my directorial career. So, and then that opened the doors, and then from then on, it was almost an annual event to go to Armenia. And originally, I was supposed to be there now. I just finished my second MA, as I was telling you, in theater in May, and I graduated. And the plan was, as early as June, to go to Armenia and receive my passport. I heard that already the response has come back positive, but I haven't been able to go to get my passport. And then, of course, COVID came, and we are just grounded now, so we can't go anywhere. But yeah, I also did a couple of plays there in more recent years at the National Theater for youth, and it was about the immigration movement back in 1940s, in Stalin's period. So anyway, it's been a long-standing relationship between Armenia and myself.
And tell us a little bit about what's happening in the current...
Currently.
Yeah, just in what's happening. Are there some young artists that are emerging, or what's happening?
Oh, there are lots of wonderful, wonderful, extremely talented and beautiful actors and actresses. I had the pleasure of working with a group of actors at the youth theater, Patanihan Pisadesi Kadrono, where Hagop Hazantian, who was the artistic director at the time, directed the play Mercedes by Anush Aslibekian, which is what I was saying to you about the emigration behind the Iron Curtain at that time. And I had the opportunity to work with wonderfully talented and lovely young people who unfortunately right now are living a horrible frustration because, of course, like everywhere else, the theaters are closed. They are still employees of the state, and theater is subsidized in Armenia, and they are still getting their salaries, but they're not huge salaries, first of all. And these actors were doing all sorts of other things on the side, such as voice recordings, radio, commercials, television, this, that, the other. And a lot of these things have been halted completely, like in theater, or slowed down because of COVID. And they are extremely frustrated. Now they are trying to make attempts at doing open-air theater before the season is too cold, or the summer runs out, and then, you know, it's too cold to do anything open-air. There are structures that are being renovated in a way that it allows for social distancing. But unfortunately, the Ministry of Culture has not yet come up with quick and tangible solutions. So there is a lot of talk going on as to what do we do? Do we take this matter in our own hands and start as independent theaters? But the infrastructure does not lend itself to that.
Yeah, that's because, right, because the state has owned everything, right? So
the state is owned, plus when they do a repertory play in Armenia, it plays 4 or 5 days or a week at most, and then it's kind of put aside and something else from the repertory rotates until it's the turn of that first play again. It's not like on Broadway or in France or any other place where theater has an ongoing audience where you can put on a show and let it run for a few months for it to monetize itself. So if in Armenia, the few theaters there are, they play the same thing for a few months on end, eventually nobody's going to go see it because very quickly whoever was supposed to go see it will have already exhausted the audience.
So the audience is small. Yeah, that's true.
It is.
Yeah. We're gonna take a quick break here. My guest is Nora Armani. She's an actor, a filmmaker. We've got lots to talk about her experiences in the theater and in the movie world. And we're gonna take a quick break and come back in just a moment on All Things Armenian.
Yes.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlo Demirgradichian. Over our break, we were listening to a song by the artist Lilit Pipoyan. It was called Ashnan Kisher. Beautiful song by Lilit from her Leah Lucine CD. Today, my guest is Nora Armani, a filmmaker, actress based now in New York. Welcome back, Nora.
Thank you, Barlo.
So we were talking a little bit about Armenia and what's taking place there. How about in the film world? What's happening?
Right. That's a very good question because I was going to come to that next because theater, unfortunately, is a situation where you have a whole group of audience, even if you leave one seat and then the next one and so on, and people wear masks, it's still all these people assembled together in an interior. Whereas in film, you are able to discuss that and do outdoors scenes, do situations where there is a skeleton crew and not very many people. And of course, with the exception of the actors, everybody else can be wearing masks. So it's possible, and from what I hear, is the filming activity or films are slowly picking up. So at least that's a good sign. But for theater actors, and there are some actors who are primarily and mainly theater actors, they are feeling very, very frustrated. And I'm reading, like, a lot of them are friends of mine on Facebook, and there is all these discussions going on, people saying that I miss theater, I want to be on stage, and of course, for a live stage actor, there's nothing like standing on a stage and communicating with your audience. It's not like film.
That's right, and that's something that, you know, we've been actually here in Fresno, we have a film series which has been going on now for several years, which we've been bringing directors and their films from Armenia, and it's really been something that's been received with a lot of popularity, both in the Armenian community and the non-Armenian community.
So, yeah, well, this is cool. We should talk about this, because with my film festival, SR Socially Relevant Film Festival, which is now in its 8th year, we're already receiving submissions for our 8th edition. The 7th, which was supposed to be in March, was of course canceled, and in June we took it online. And every year, this is an international festival. We had about 38 films this year. Other years we've had 50, 60, depending on how long the short films are. It varies. One year we had 70 films over the week. So it was really crazy. So now we're trying to calm down a bit on that. Every year I make sure that Armenian films are included, even though it's an international program. We represent 35 countries, and we've screened over 400 films by now. But that we already have screened a good number of Armenian films. We should try to collaborate and bring some of these films to you, and then bring your films to us.
Yeah, it's a great idea, because what we really should do is to try to form sort of a network in the United States or North America where people, you know, that come, they could go to, you know, four or five different venues, right? Not just one or two, but if we were going to bring them all the way to Fresno, of course they could come to the Bay Area, Los Angeles, and other places, right?
Exactly, because if we don't do it, like the Armenian organizations or Armenian-friendly organizations don't do it, then who will, you know? It's all these films will not get seen unless we screen them.
Now, you started the Socially Relevant Film Festival. Tell us a little bit about the background. What gave you the idea to found that?
Yeah. And
what's the purpose, mission?
Yeah, well, the Socially Relevant Film Festival, as the title prompts, it's a festival that is exclusively dedicated to showing films that deal with social issues or are relevant socially one way or another. And these social issues can be from a broad spectrum, such as it could be about women, it could be about integration, identity, it could be about immigration, refugees, human trafficking, it could be about the environment, capital punishment, the prison system, race, you name it. You name it, we've screened it until now. So every year, we don't decide ahead of time that what the theme of that particular year is going to be. Rather, we go with the submissions that come our way, which is a good indicator as to what is out there and what is really concerning the filmmakers enough for them to go out and start making films about those topics. So the idea came to me because I was getting really upset and disturbed seeing film posters like all over the place, like on billboards, on buses, on bus stops, everywhere, with so much violence in them, like guns. If you look at movies, American movies especially, very rarely you see a poster that doesn't have some sort of weapon on it, like a gun, a machine gun, a knife dripping with blood, or some violence images like somebody running away and being chased and this and that. And I'm saying, okay, if I don't like violent movies, I can decide not to go to the cinema to see them. But I have no choice in these big posters that are staring at me and invading my space. So that was one. The other was a personal story of violence that happened to my cousin and my uncle back in Egypt in 2004 were murdered. They became victims of a horrible hate crime by a fundamentalist neighbor who had been away for 7 years and suddenly appeared. And he decided that it was his God-sent duty to cleanse the building. So they unfortunately paid it with their lives, this horrible crime. And as the 10th anniversary of their murder was approaching, I wanted to commemorate their memory by something meaningful. And initially, my first reaction, combined with the poster situation, I wanted to do something about nonviolent films. But then I felt this might be very limiting. So I opened it up to include all sorts of social issues. So that's how the festival initially was triggered.
And when do you usually hold it?
Usually we hold it in March. It's very difficult to decide when is a good time to hold something in New York, because
right,
whenever you decide to do something, there's always something going on. So Tribeca Festival, which is the biggest event that happens in New York, is in April. And then there are a bunch of other festivals that happen in January. There is the New York Festival that happens September, October. But my main motivation of holding it in March was also the fact that the anniversary of this horrible murder was March 16th. So in a way, by doing it in March, that also makes sense to commemorate them.
And how has the community received it? I mean, it became very popular, I understand, right?
Yes, yes. The first year, of course, was like a very difficult journey for me. I would wake up in the middle of the night with in cold sweat and going, what am I doing? This is crazy. With no funding, I'm practically funding the whole thing myself. This is nuts. I'm going to, you know, it's not going to work. But then people came on board and helped. At the beginning, of course, it was very difficult, but we plowed through it. And then the second year already, people started approaching and saying, we were there at your opening. We would like to come on board and become sponsors, help, and so on and so forth. So now we have a bunch of returning sponsors. And for the next few years, we have also been getting state and city grants from New York State and the city of New York. But all this happens once you start delivering the goods. You can't just come out and say to people, okay, give me money. I have an idea. I want to do it. They want to see what you can deliver. So once we delivered the goods the first year and then the second year and so on, like from the third, fourth year, things started picking up. And now the eighth year, I'm hoping that also you learn along the process, along the way. In the process, and you go and think, okay, it's not about how big your festival is, how huge number of cinemas you're involving, and how many films you are showing. No, it's more about the quality of what you are bringing and giving the opportunity to a number of filmmakers whose work otherwise would totally not be seen.
And you've been involved in something very innovative that you've just been working on, which is the iMigrant Woman play. So tell us a little bit about that. It's what you did online, and tell us a little bit about the play.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. This play was something that was written and published and performed in Italy 16 years ago, and the author had contacted me back then. Because there are three different monologues by three different women who are immigrants. And she had heard about me and my work and my one-woman show. And she contacted me to play one of the characters. So we met. I went to the Italian Riviera. She was living there at the time. And we communicated. But then our lives took other turns. And each one went their way. And kind of the play got continued. She was doing it in Italy, in Italian, it's in the school system. And I kind of forgot about it, doing other stuff. Recently, when I was at Hunter College last semester, I thought, wow, this is so timely. After all this time, it still makes a lot of sense. And I can cast it and do it in a small New York theater. Of course, you know, the rest of the story with COVID. So I felt, wow, this play lends itself very well to doing it on Zoom. Now, a lot of people are doing plays on Zoom, but they are mostly play readings. People are putting together readings and they are reading them. So I felt, what can I do to make it more like a performance? And one of the most important things was to cast the right actors. The second important thing was to get them to memorize their lines and learn instead of just read it from the screen or from a script next to them so that they have a little bit more freedom to perform it rather than to read it. And that all came across very beautifully in the performances we did yesterday and today. We had a huge turnout. And now people are asking us to do it again. So there is a good chance we might do it again in September. Because before that, in August, the film festival is doing SR for Black Voices. That's another project we have. A retrospective of films we have shown until now on Black Voices. But to come back to the play, the three monologues are about three different immigrant women. who have come to a country, and the original is in Italy, but it could be anywhere, and they are talking to us and telling us about their experience, feeling outcast, struggling with the language, their otherness, and their dreams about why they are there. Do they want to stay, or are they there just to make money and go back to their country? Are their loved ones with them or without them, and so on and so forth. So it has turned out to be the message it has really hit home with the audience, and I'm very, very happy about the way it turned out.
Yeah, I think it's a message that Armenians could also resonate with, right? I mean, they could also, because Armenians have been such immigrants in history, right?
Totally. We had a very nice mixed audience. It was mostly non-Armenian, but we did have a number of Armenians who attended. And I was actually thinking that this play could work very well if we translate it to Armenian and do it in Armenia. Because in Armenia, we don't think of the people in Armenia as immigrants, but now we have a lot of diaspora people living in Armenia, and it's a reverse reaction. Then we can have an Armenian from Armenia living in another country, and that could be another dimension. And as a third monologue or a third example, we can have one of the minorities that are currently in Armenia, like, for example, the Yezdis, and also we have a lot of Indians now in Armenia and other minorities who have always been there, but we never talk about them.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. That would be very interesting, especially looking at the perspective of an Armenian in Armenia, looking at Armenians from Syria and other places now coming and living in Armenia.
Right. It would definitely, the material lends itself very easily. For example, the first character in the play that we did yesterday and today, in my version, is from Africa, from Nigeria. And however, the original was written, the character is from Albania. The second character, the original, is from Philippines. And in my version, we did two different actresses for that one. Yesterday, it was a Romanian actress who did a Eastern European character. And today, the same character was played by a Colombian actress playing the South American or Colombian experience in the country of immigration. And the third one is Farida, who is Middle Eastern, but could also be Persian, or it could be any other Muslim country. And I divided that role into two characters, Farida being the new immigrant and Frida being the one that has been around and integrated more into the culture, but still suffers from issues in her writing that have to do with women and identity.
Well, this has been fascinating. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Nora. It's been a pleasure talking to you about your work and about what's happening in the theater world and film world in Armenia, and about your innovative and really outstanding work in New York with the Socially Relevant Film Festival. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for hosting me. I really feel like, oh, wow, like the good old times. And hopefully we will be able to bring all these projects live to a real audience instead of through this computer screen.
I would look forward to that. Thank you. Let's take a break on All Things Armenian, and we'll come back and finish up this episode. Thank you. Oh,
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. This is Professor Barlo Dermagradichian of the Armenian Studies Program. I'm your host. We have just completed a discussion with Nora Armani, a filmmaker, actress, based in New York. Very interesting discussion. And during our break here, we were listening to more music by Lilit Pipoyan. Lilit Pipoyan is an Armenian musician, singer, and architect. And she's one of these popular modern Armenian musicians whose work presents kind of an alternative to the traditional folk and classical music that we are used to listening to from Armenia. She was born in Yerevan to a family of artists and received her PhD actually in architecture, but she's one of the really popular musicians today in Armenia and throughout the world. The Armenian Studies Program will be holding its usual set of activities in the fall semester coming up starting in August, but because of the coronavirus pandemic, all of our upcoming events will be online through Zoom. So we will be posting our upcoming events on our website at www.fresnostate.edu/Armenian Studies and also at our Facebook at Armenian Studies Fresno State. And you'll be able to follow and see those upcoming events beginning in late August and September. Classes actually begin on Wednesday, August the 19th at Fresno State. We are going to be teaching a full set of Armenian courses, including a beginning Armenian language course. We're going to be teaching a course in Armenian art called The Arts of Armenia. I'll be teaching a course in Armenian history. It's a survey of Armenian history from the origins of the Armenians all the way up through the 13th, 14th century. And we're also going to be teaching Armenian literature and culture courses. So we are going forward with all of our courses. They will be taught online. Today, as we end our program, I'm going to be talking a little bit about our Armenian series at Fresno State. So about 15 years ago or so, a little bit more maybe, the Armenian Studies Program began to publish books of Armenian themes through what is called the Press at California State University, Fresno. So the Press at California State University, Fresno, publishes a variety of works related to just about anything, but primarily in the area of literature. And thanks to an endowment which was established by the Victoria Karagozian Kazan and Henry S. Khanzadian Kazan family, the endowment provided us with the income to begin publishing a series of works. And I want to talk a little bit about those because it's an alternative to this summer, which many of you have been maybe staying in the house or not being able to go out. You can read some very interesting works on a variety of topics that I think will be of great interest to you. Now, 2 years ago in 2018, late 2018, we published number 7 in the Armenian series. It was a book called Western Armenian in the 21st Century, Challenges and New Approaches. And this book was based on a conference which was held by the Society for Armenian Studies, the Society for Armenian Studies representing Armenian scholars throughout the world. And what it did was to bring together experts. The SAS brought together experts in the field of Western Armenian. And so the results of the conference were published in this book. And for those of you that are interested in learning about how language is taught and about some new methods for teaching language, this book has turned out to be a really helpful way for people to do so. It presents the latest work and research in the field of areas like language acquisition, both theoretical and practical. And if you are teaching in an Armenian school or even just learning Armenian on your own, it would be interesting to read this book because it gives you a perspective on how language is being taught today, meaning not only just Armenian, but how do people learn languages? And that is called, again, Western Armenian in the 21st Century, Challenges and New Approaches. That was number 7 in the Armenian series. Our 8th volume was just published in late 2019. It's a really fascinating book called Armenian American Sketches. Armenian American Sketches was originally written in the Armenian language by a man called Bedros Keljik. Bedros Keljik was born originally in Armenia, but emigrated to the United States. And what's interesting is that he wrote about 28 stories that are encompassed in the book about life in the Armenian world, that is in the United States for immigrants, where the Armenians were living. And he tells very humorous stories which illustrate some of the challenges that the Armenians faced in the United States. I think it's sort of the immigrant story. How did immigrants face some of the challenges that they did? Now, the book is composed, as I said, of 28 short stories, all in English. It's a translation from the Armenian. The majority of the works were translated from Armenian to English by Aris Sevag, but were also translated by Luan Matosyan and by Vartan Matiosyan. And, you know, Armenians began arriving to the United States in large numbers at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. In fact, the first Armenian immigrants came to California, came to Fresno, and settled here permanently beginning in 1881. But Armenians established themselves in communities throughout the United States, and what they tried to do was to maintain their Armenian culture. But at the same time, they had to come to understanding that they also were becoming acclimated to life in America. And that's the bulk of the story of Armenian American Sketches. And he really brings to light, Bedros Keljik does, this period in Armenian American history. He uses satire, he uses humor, he illustrates the sadness and the joy of Armenian families, the hard work and challenges that they faced. And I think it's something that pretty much all immigrants could understand because, you know, immigrants who come to countries have to face usually a lot of challenges. And that's what was done by the Armenians. Many people don't think of Armenians today as being immigrants because, especially here in Fresno, many people think Armenians have been here, well, forever, but it's really only been since the 1880s. And every Armenian here in the United States had to face the same kind of hard work and challenges that Armenians had to face in other places. So the book is called Armenian American Sketches by Bedros Keljik. And all of these books are available at bookstores such as Abril Bookstore in Glendale, California, They are online. And also the National Association for Armenian Studies and Research also has these books online as part of its Armenian series. Now, the next book that we've published, and we're really kind of publishing quite a few books here in 2020. The next book that was published was a book called Armenians and Kurds in the Late Ottoman Empire. And this book was published in early 2020. And it's a book which comprises articles based on another conference which was given by the Society for Armenian Studies. Actually, not by the Armenian Studies organization, but by the Armenian Studies program here at Fresno State. And one of the areas that has been little studied has been about the history of Armenians in the late period of the Ottoman Empire, and also other groups such as Kurds and Greeks. So this book really brings together some of the most interesting kinds of stories, articles about the Armenians, and there are five eminent scholars who have contributed to this book. I'm going to give you the names of the articles and the chapters because I think it'll be interesting for you. The first is by Owen Miller, Dr. Owen Miller. It's called Uplands, Lowlands, and Mass Violence in Ottoman Cilicia. The second article is by Dr. Umid Kurt. It's The Breakdown of a Previously Peaceful Coexistence, the Aintab Armenian Massacres of 1895. Dr. Kurt was a visiting professor here at Fresno State, and he focuses his historical work on the city of Aintab, especially in the early 20th century. And it talks about how what had previously been a coexistence, peaceful coexistence, broke down. The next article is by Emre Can Dalioğlu. In the Wake of the Ahtamar Catholicosate's Demise. And this is a report given in 1895 by the late Ahtamar Catholicos, the last Catholicos, Khachadur II, who wrote a report about what was happening to the Armenians in Van. And this is extremely important because the Armenians in Van were the area in the old Ottoman Empire, which was probably up until the time of the Armenian Genocide, mostly inhabited by Armenians. So it gives us a firsthand knowledge of what happened in this area of the world. Really interesting article. The next article is about the Kurds, something that has not been studied very much. And this article is by Nilay Ozak Gundogan, and it's called Can One Save the Voices of the Ordinary Kurds from the Enormous Condensation of Posterity, An Agenda for Social History in Kurdish Historical Writing. It's a long title, but what she does, Dr. Ozuk Gundogan does, is to analyze how Kurds are framed in history. And the Kurds actually do not write a lot about their own history. So the perspective we have mostly of Kurds comes from either Turkish historiography or sometimes from the Armenians, but not necessarily from the Kurds themselves. And she frames this article as being part of the search for Kurds in Turkish history. And the final article is by Varak Getsamanyan. Varak Getsamanyan is a graduate student at Princeton University. His work studies the Hunchak political party, and his chapter is called Ideology, Paradoxes, and Fedayis in the Late Ottoman Empire, A Historiographical Challenge and Methodological Problems in the Study of the Armenian Revolutionary Movement. And what he does then is to study these movement of the Hunchak Party, the Hunchak Socialist Party in the Ottoman Empire. The book is edited by Umid Kurt and Ara Sarafian. It's available also at Abril Bookstore. All of our books in the Armenian series at Fresno State are part of these. And if you have some reading time available, you can go out and get those books. So for All Things Armenian, I want to welcome you and thank you for joining us on another episode. And we'll see you next week for another episode of All Things Armenian.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.